So, welcome along to the second episode of the Haven Rugby League Fans Podcast. And back again today is myself, Dave Farrell, and...
And myself, Paul Stubbs.
Yeah, how you doing, Paul? How's the last week been on the transport system in Greater Manchester?
Well, it's getting busier again because obviously we're coming out of lockdown as such. And it is starting to pick up again. We've gone back to a 12-minute service from a 20-minute service, and people are getting out, apart from today when it's poured down, and people have stayed in, which is a good thing, I suppose.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it. That's maybe the key message maybe come across today from our podcast, that things are starting to get back to normal. And on that score, rugby league's actually starting to get back to some sort of normality, because just in the last weekend, Sky Sports had live rugby league for the first time in 2 months when we had the NRL return to action. Did you manage to watch any of the games, Paul?
Unfortunately not, Dave. I've been working, and I've not caught up with anything as yet, but yeah. Unfortunately, I should be up there with all you lot, but unfortunately, I'm still down here because I'm on holiday and we should have been up at the caravan this week.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, I'm down in sunny Radcliffe.
Oh, well, wow.
Wet Radcliffe.
Yeah. So, just coming back to the NRL business, as I say, I think it was people were really keen to see some live rugby league action, and they weren't disappointed. Started off with Brisbane against Parramatta on Thursday morning and ran right through the weekend. Some good rugby played, some good games. The Rabbitohs Roosters game on the Friday, I think, lived up to all expectations. And then we've seen Canberra with George Williams, the ex-Wigan player, really having a standout game there. So some big highlights of the weekend. The highlight of the weekend for me, I've got to say, wasn't really as much to do with the players, but if you recall, the Bundesliga started just before the NRL, and everybody's commentating how sterile and lacking in atmosphere those televised games were. The NRL seemed to have solved that problem, because in every game that was televised, there'd somebody somewhere in the stadium who was pumping out crowd noise through the stadium tannoy, and to me that seemed to add to the atmosphere and work pretty well, and as I say, certainly enhanced the viewing experience, I think.
Yeah, it's different. The thing was, it in Taiwan or somewhere, or South Korea, where they put, should we say, inflatable mannequins in as good as the crowd at the football matches, and got done for it. Yeah. It's the best way to put it, I think, inflatable mannequins. those people who have ever been to Blackpool on a Friday night and stag parties and men parties will know exactly what I'm on about.
That's right. Well, they're made in Taiwan.
They tried that.
I think they're made in Taiwan.
Well, probably. Not that I know. No, it's not. No.
Anyway, so that was the NRL starting back. So as I say, that's the first step on hopefully things getting back to normal. The other announcement recently, which I think is worth noting, is that the Super League are targeting the resumption of fixtures on the weekend of the 1st of August. So still a few things to sort out, but that's still 2 months off, really. So still a long way to go, but hopefully something to aim at, Paul.
Hopefully, yeah. There's still time to call a halt to it all. We just got to see how we go on, haven't we?
That's right.
We're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
At the moment, no matter whether it's football, well, cricket apparently starting back behind closed doors.
That's right.
Is it West Indies we've got a test match against?
There's three tests against the West Indies in July. Yeah. And speaking to some of my online friends just recently, who's involved with Headingley, notably the Rhinos, but has something to do with the cricket there. And he was telling me that Headingley was open to stage one of the test matches. The thing being, they're looking for grounds where there's hotels which can host the both the teams, plus all the media that's going to be there.
I think Old Trafford's been penciled in as well. Well, there is a hotel attached to Old Trafford.
Correct, absolutely correct. Yeah, Old Trafford has been penciled in, and the other venue is the Aegeus Bowl in Southampton, which again, likewise, is.
It's got a hotel, hasn't it?
A large hotel. But apparently, my friend from Leeds, from Headingley, was telling me that they don't think they'll probably get the test match at Headingley because the hotel isn't big enough to accommodate all the people that's going to be there. And it's a case of once they turn up, they've really got to stay within the hotel and within the ground.
I mean, I think I won't swear to this, but there's a Premier Inn. Plus, they've got the football hotel at Old Trafford as well, which is a buzz ride away.
Where the
actual football ground is, for those people who don't know, the football ground's at the end of one road, and the cricket ground's at the other, with about 250 yards in between them both. Mm. So they might get away with it at Old Trafford.
Yeah. So that gives you some idea of the logistics that sport's going to have to deal with to get games played, even behind closed doors. And as I say, Super League's going to face, I would imagine, almost the same problems. So, first of all,
Formula One's got the same problem, Dave.
Yes.
Today, they're hoping for a Grand Prix on the 8th of, is it the 8th or 16th of August or something like that?
Yes, that's right.
Again, behind closed doors.
Yeah. But as I say, it's still massive logistic problems. And as I say, Super League, hopefully, will be able to sort them out. And we'll see action back in the UK on around the 1st of August. Just the other thing...
Well, let's keep everything crossed, eh?
Yeah, let's see. One of the things about these behind-doors competitions, and like in Australia, the New Zealand Warriors have effectively left home in Auckland and moved lock, stock and barrel to the New South Wales coast, apparently, for the duration of the competition, which is going to be well into October. With our Super League, you've got Catalans and you have Toronto, who...
Well, Toronto do that anyway, don't they?
Well, yes. They're based in the UK and fly out to Canada. Yeah. But certainly the Catalans are going to have some issues to overcome to be able to meet their sort of fixture.
Being behind closed doors, it's not so bad, I suppose, because the fan base obviously isn't there. Well, the fan base is there, but it's on TV, isn't it? It all depends where they're going to play.
That's right. I mean, could Headingley be a venue? Maybe, I don't know.
Could well be. Because they're talking about keeping it in pods, aren't they?
That's right. We're going to see what they come up with anyway.
Watch this space, I think.
Everything's up for debate and discussion. Finally, just one of the last things I want to say, Paul, about news this week. Our last podcast with James Gordon, we were talking about the championship teams and the working parties set up to look at ways of getting the championship and League One back up and running. The news is that those groups are now meeting remotely. So hopefully we should have some response from them in the next week or two. And at that point, we'll have a better idea of what the future is going to hold for teams like Whitehaven and Workington and whatever.
Yeah, I think listening to James last week, it was quite interesting the way he how he looked at this season going. And he was talking about, if I'm not mistaken, teams being furloughed, i.e., Widnes have been furloughed, because I think that's his team anyway.
That's right.
Widnes players have all been furloughed. Now, if they have to come back to play games behind closed doors, there's no income from the crowds or anything. So yes, they're going to struggle. And that's why I can't see us returning to any championship rugby at all this year, financial-wise.
So the working parties are now being convened. Hopefully that they'll respond back with the findings very soon, and hopefully we'll get some clarification. But I share your sort of pessimism.
I'm a bit of a downer, but
and indeed James Gordon's sort of thoughts on it. But let's wait and see. Let's not prejudge the issue. And let's see what they come back with in a few weeks. So yeah, so moving on with the Haven Rugby League Fans podcast. In today's issue, we've got some really good speakers. We've got ex-Haven coach Steve McCormack joining us later, and I look forward to reminiscing and recalling old times with Steve, and perhaps looking forward talking about what he's doing now, which is quite interesting. We'll also be dipping out of the professional arena. Some positive news in what's been a pretty grey sort of period for sport, especially local sport, in so much that Rothbrow Hornets, the local amateur club who are playing in the National Conference League, got a £100,000 grant from the World Cup from last week. So we'll find out a bit more about that later in the programme, in the podcast. So yeah, so hopefully some interesting stuff later on, Paul. But just move on in this first part of the podcast. And just something I've been thinking might be a good opportunity. People ask me, what does Trust in Haven do? What do the Whitehaven Independent Supporters Trust do? Trust can do a number of things. They're really there to try and enhance what the professional club are doing, to try and make sure the community in the club are sort of working together and working as one, and hopefully trying to get supporters more involved with the club and helping the club out. The Trust was formed in 2010, and looking back over the time, there's been a number of issues I've been involved in with Paul. As I said, just try and give people some flavour of what we've done over the years. As I say, the first couple of years of the Trust's existence, 2011-2012, Trust in Haven were actually the shirt sponsors for what was the under-21 reserve team then.
Yeah, and that was going to go on again this season, had we got a reserve team this season, because we were approached by the directors before, well, it was still in a melting pot, would we help out, and we were going to give a significant amount of money or whatever we could spare towards helping the reserve team get off the ground again. But unfortunately, it didn't come into fruition. We were rejected from the reserve league. So it never came into fruition, unfortunately, but we were there to help them.
That's perhaps a good example of what a trust can do. The trust can do things which enhance the club as a rugby club, as a sporting club, and as an organisation, and certainly being able to get involved and support financially things like a player development policy in the reserve side, yeah, fits very neatly with what the Trust's about. As I say, it didn't happen. I hope it happens in the future, and when it does, the trust will certainly be more than happy to work with the club and provide support for the reserve grade.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. We'll be there if they need us for that type of thing.
Yeah. Just moving on. Don't know if people can remember this, but going back to the early 2000s, the club had or introduced a mascot called Pride the Lion. Which was very well received and did a lot of good work in the community. That suit was never going to last forever. And round about 2014, 15, it reached the point where it was worn out. And at that point, we stumped up a significant amount of cash to get the new lion suit, the Spaceman Lion, as some people called him.
it was quite confusing on a number of occasions when I said, why have we got Spaceman? Well, there we go.
Yeah, that was a club's choice at the time. So we provided the Pride mascot version 2. Unfortunately, we don't see that now. It'd be great if the club could resurrect that Paul.
Yeah, he's probably run off somewhere. He's probably hiding on Tembi's head or something like that.
Who knows, yeah.
Who knows? There are some strange creatures that wander up there, believe me. Especially in Lycra, but we'll not go there.
And, again, round about 2014, 2015, the Trust introduced this initiative, which we called the Square Meal Deal, which was effectively where we sold off two tickets for someone to go into the Sponsors Lounge, the Gary Perrin Suite, on match days. And that generated a lot of interest, got people going in there. That's now evolved. It's been taken on by Sean Drinkwater, and it's now called the 300 Club. And Sean,
it's escalated, hasn't it? He's done quite well with that, and it's escalated.
Has taken it on. So all power to Sean's elbow for that. But as I say, that was a Trust initiative. When he first got off the ground about five seasons ago.
We've now taken over with the last fan standing. Unfortunately, if there's no rugby, there's no money.
That's right. But I mean, me own sort of thoughts are, we'll do whatever we can. We'll try and support the club with initiatives. With new initiatives, where we think that fits in with the Trust's aims and objectives.
I totally agree with you, Dave. We'll help out in any way we can.
Yeah,
so it fits in with our directors.
That's right, and again, just something I draw people's attention to: the club and the community, and being as one and working together and supporting the community and in return expecting the community to support the rugby league community. We've got a prime example of this just now with our Trust initiative with Stag Sports for the NHS Thank You NHS T-shirts. I think you've been tracking that, Paul, if you could tell us where we're up to on that.
We're on about 35 plus. With orders taken by yourself, Dave, orders that have gone direct to Stag. Anybody who still wants one, they're available on the website, on our Trusting Haven website. We're looking at probably closing it early next week. Is that right, Dave?
That's right. And even if we don't get any more orders, we're still on track for making a donation to somewhere in the region of £300.
To
Cumbrian NHS charities, and that's all down to Whitehaven Rugby League and its supporters, and hopefully that'll help some good causes, but it also shows the club working in conjunction with the community.
Yeah, very much so, and that's just to highlight the Trust are making nothing out of this. All the profit and everything is going direct to NHS charities.
Absolutely, that's the deal. That's the deal. I'd say
that's the deal.
So I say £300 to the NHS, and we all know what they've done and why they deserve our support. And as I say, the Whitehaven Rugby League supporters doing us proud there. So thanks very much to all who's bought the shirt. And I'll just echo what Paul said that. Orders are still open until Monday the 8th of June. And so if you haven't got yours in, go to trustinhaven.com and go to the page on there and get your order in before Monday the 8th of June.
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul. So that's about all we can sort of see at the moment. We await further developments on the rugby league front. As I say, the podcast, we've got a couple of guests coming on later. But for the time being, we'll just say thanks to you, Paul, and just say to anyone who's listening, if they want to get involved with the podcast, we're really looking for people to come on and join in the banter, join in the crack. If you feel that's something you want to do, contact us on our email at trustinhaven@gmail.com or go to our website www.trustinhaven.com, and we're also on Facebook and Twitter. So that's it. Thanks very much for your time, Paul. Have a good week on your week off.
Shame it's I'd not, rather be up there with you lot, I must admit.
It's a shame. Shame
I do miss it up there.
Yeah, shame you're not up here in Cumbria.
I don't mind wet Cumbria, but wet Manchester's a bit much.
Yeah, good stuff then, Paul. Thanks for now.
All right, take care, everybody. Stay safe.
Stay safe. Thank you.
I'll see you soon.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Okay, so there we go. So, yeah, so for the next part of the Haven Rugby League Fans podcast, episode 2, we really have made a scoop here because we've got former Haven head coach Steve McCormack joining us today. So welcome along, Steve.
Hi, Dave. Good to speak to you.
Yeah, great to have you along. Yeah, so you're keeping busy in these difficult times. You've taken on a new role with the Rugby Football League, and we'll maybe talk about more about that after. But as I say, this podcast is for the Haven fans who you know well, you know what they're all about, and it's a chance to talk about the past and maybe a bit about the present and the future. So going back to the very beginning, you came to Whitehaven in 2003, and you were already set fair on, I think it's true to say, on a coaching career. You'd actually were the youngest coach in Super League even before you came to Whitehaven.
Yeah, I was. My playing career got cut short very early with a shoulder injury. You know, I was 16, 17 when that happened. And I was really fortunate that St Jude's gave me a bit of an opportunity just to coach in the community club, you know, some young teams there. And then just by chance, speaking to Andy Gregory, you know, my dad was good friends with Andy, at Salford. And we got the opportunity to go to Salford in 1995, which was a centenary season. And that was unbelievable. Greg was one of my heroes. And to be given the opportunity to work with him and, you know, the success that Greg had and we had at Salford was unbelievable in the early days. And, you know, I was very fortunate to be part of that.
That's right. As I say, by 2001-2002, you were head coach there, but the team at that point sort of struggled a lot usually in Super League, and you parted company from Salford, which really opened the door for you coming to Whitehaven in 2003.
It did, yeah. It was a tough time at Salford. I had five years there where I was, assistant and head of youth and doing everything there and supporting Greg. And then it was a struggle at Salford. You know, the team had struggled with a number of coaches prior to me taking over. And I had three or four games, 2001, at the end of the season. Then I had a few games at the start of it. And then, I got released from the contract. But I always remember getting the phone call from Barry Richardson. Regarding Whitehaven, and I didn't really know too much about the club. I always remember going, I think he was at the meeting, Dave, where was it? At Penrith.
That's right.
The M6, horrendous weather. It took me probably about 3 hours to get there. I think yourself was there, and Kenny Shepherd, and Ron Batty, Barry Richardson. And to be honest, I didn't know whether I wanted to carry on coaching. You know, I had a bit of a gutful after what happened at Salford. But as soon as I went to that meeting in Penrith and met you all and for you to give me that opportunity, I never looked back. And it's something that I will always be thankful of, you know, to meet you all and then obviously come and, you know, eventually coach at the club.
Yeah, so you're appointed coach in the autumn of 2002. So very soon afterwards you came up rolled your sleeves and got stuck into the coaching job. What were your first impressions of those first training sessions at the club?
Oh, brilliant. I remember the first game I watched up in Cumbria, and it was Egremont, and it was an Aboriginal side had come over from Australia, and the weather, I've never seen nothing like it. And for that, the whole of that pre-season, the weather was horrendous. We had a couple of sessions on the pit. You know, a lot of our sessions were at the rec. But my first impressions were I was taking over a club that I know Paul Cullen had been in previously. Yeah, and Paul had done fantastic work with regards to maybe changing the culture of the club. And I looked around at some of the players that we had. Generally, the people and the welcoming, you know, nature of not only myself but my family. I remember my first press conference, and you know, the first question was regarding, you know, should Whitehaven working to merge? That was my very first question. But just all around, you know, the people, the supporters, the community clubs, and I know there was a couple of bridges to be built with the community clubs around that that time, but. My first impressions were very cold, very windy, but a fantastic place to be.
So, as I said, the 2003 season kicked off. I think it was Northern Rail, and the team sort of hit the ground running, from what I recollect, and sort of got into a winning frame of mind, sort of almost from the start.
Yeah, I remember we did start well, and I think that's always important when a new coach comes in. You know, I think, you know, we had a good side, some real good players. You know, we started the Northern Rail Cup. You know, we was in a group. Obviously, they tried to keep the groups local, so we had some local derbies in there, and I soon got introduced to the Whitehaven Workington derby, which for me is one of the best ones in the competition. You know, you can take. You know, your Wigan and your St Helens, which are outstanding derbies, your Hull and your Hull KR. But, you know, experienced my first, you know, Whitehaven Workington derby. And we had a good record against them as well, which always helped. But, yeah, we had a good run in the Northern Rail Cup. And I think that just set the scene, really, for, you know, for the next few months and years.
Absolutely, yeah. 2003, the team, as I say, performed well. Got some good wins, but perhaps didn't quite... achieve the consistency that they maybe were to do later on, but the team still got into the playoffs. I think we went to Rochdale and lost there, but not a pretty good first season. But that was nothing in comparison to what was to come in the next 2 years, Steve, which were absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, I must admit, the first season I was a bit disappointed. We started well. We had a bit of a blip mid-season. You know, lost some games that we probably should have won.
Yeah.
At the end of the season, you know, I was really disappointed that we got beat at Rochdale. I remember that well. They had a good side then, to be fair to them. You know, well coached, and as a coach, we probably made some tough decisions, and as a board as well. You know, we had some really loyal top players at Whitehaven, and you know, they've given good service to the club as well. But I think if we was going to kick on with you know. Those players would still be a massive part of the club, but recruitment was going to be important, you know. So if we were going to move on as a club, you know, and realise the ambitions that everybody wanted at the time, and you know, give the town and the area a team that will be successful, we maybe had to just bring a couple of players in, and I were lucky that the players within the town and you know the Kiwis that was in the squad. Were absolutely phenomenal athletes, people and players. But I just felt as though we needed to bring a couple of players from outside the area. And that was really important to keep the core of the local team, but bring some quality into the side as well in crucial positions. And I think that was a big difference as well, you know, the following couple of seasons.
That's right. 2004 was very much a season where it was Lee against Whitehaven. We met them on a number of occasions. Lee, as we know, prevailed in the end. But it was a great season and could have been so much different with just a little bit more luck, maybe.
I think so. I think on the whole, probably Lee deserved it that year. We'd made massive strides. I think we've come a long way in a short space of time. You know, players like Sam Hobbs had made a big impression at the club. Mick Nanning had come in. You know, it was a real good season. That grand final, if you look at any grand final or any game, you know, we've been looking at quite a few of them during the lockdown, some past games. That was an outstanding game. You know, maybe
absolutely.
You know, maybe a couple of decisions, and you know, I look back, could have done things differently. Maybe I could, and you know, the odd missed tackle, the odd missed goal kick, it could have been so different. But I couldn't have asked for any more from the player. You know, and the town, you know, the whole town and the whole area got behind us, and that game at you know, at Widnes was an unbelievable game, and you know, congratulations to Lee, they just pipped us.
That's right. So at the end of that season, some of the key players, as you say, Sam Obst and Ryan Tandy, who you know, the Australian, they sort of moved on, and some new faces came in. So the big question in 2005 to me was, could we continue that progress, that forward momentum? And very much the case. I mean, 2005 really was a season to remember.
Yeah, well, we had to continue that momentum, Dave. That you know, it was no use just being a one season wonder. Yeah. To challenge that. To be fair, the players wanted to do that as well. You know, I was really ambitious. You know, I was just aware that I didn't want to overcoach the players because of the players we'd got, and the recruitment again that year. You know, losing a key player like Sam was a big blow to us, but we'd done our jobs. You know, we'd gone to Super League and fair play to him. And you know, we looked at the recruitment side of it, and I knew it had to be certain people to come into the club. You know, in the area, you know, we had to do a lot of digging on the personalities because I didn't want to bring players in who wouldn't fit in the culture of not only the club but the town and the people. And Joel Penny came in, you know, a couple of other players, and he did a fantastic job. And if you look back at that season, you know, I think from a budget point of view, Castleford, and I know they won the grand final at the end of it, and you know, pretty convincingly in that grand final. But
yeah,
we had that year, and probably the style of rugby and some of the performances that the players put in was fantastic.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the while the ultimate climax of the season was. Probably, well, I don't say it probably, it was definitely a major disappointment. But those closing weeks of the 2005 season were really a special time for me. Whitehaven had always been known for a team that could get so far, but then would stall at the final hurdle. And we had to go to Rochdale to claim the league leaders title. And the performance that day, I think, was probably the best I've ever seen from a Whitehaven team, certainly away from home. The win that day at Rochdale to clinch the league was stuff of dreams.
Yeah, and I don't think you can underestimate that, Dave. You know, from what the players and the club achieved, you know, that year. I remember that Rochdale game. Everybody, the whole town just came in fancy dress. You know, when we came, the opposite side and the stand.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. And there's always that worry in the back of your mind, you know, will the players be able to perform in this? And
that's right.
And it was a brilliant performance. And I remember after it, you know, the scenes after it, I've got a photograph just, you know, a metre away from me with my youngest lad, Luke. You know, he was a baby in my arms. And it was fantastic. And I always remember not wanting to go back to the club. You know, I wanted to go back to my family. And, you know, I wasn't one. You know, celebrating. I love winning, but I always like, you know, just sitting back and going with my family. But Peter Smith said, no, you've got to come back. You've got to come back to the Rectory. There might be a few people waiting. So I did do, and we travelled up there. And when we got back to the Rec, flipping it, what a night that was,
yes.
It was like we'd won the World Cup. It was unbelievable.
The party to end all parties, as I say. Yeah. It just meant
so much to everybody. And you know, that night, you know, I remember watching a video of it and watching a video back of the performance at Rochdale, and you know, when we went into the club and the supporters waiting for us. You know, it's unbelievable.
that's what makes it all worthwhile, doesn't it, really? Yeah, you know. So, but the Rochdale game wasn't the end of it, because then we went into the playoffs, and the playoff game against Castleford, which got us to that year's grand final. Again, it's a game that will go down in the club's history.
Yeah, definitely. That, what, you know, the crowd was unbelievable. Castleford started the game really well, but I always felt as though second half we were playing towards the Kells end. We'd done it so many times before, and even though we were, you know, a few scores down, I was still really confident in, you know, the players we had, and, you know, that second half, you know, the performance and the way the crowd got behind us and the composure that everybody, you know, had under immense pressure was brilliant. And then when we got awarded the, you know, the League Leaders Trophy, you know, the first trophy in the history of the club. Again, the scenes, I remember Kenny Shepherd crying, coming over to me and, you know, he'd never seen anything like it. And
that's right.
There were good times, Dave. You know, I look back now and, you know, probably the ears on the back of my neck still stand up when I think about it. You know, just the special times we had at the club.
That's right. And I'd say your contribution to that was noted, because you were at the end of season dinner in Leeds. You voted coach of the year that year. So you know, your contribution, what you'd done at the club was recognised on the wider stage.
Yeah, it's you know, fantastic to get awards like that. But from a coach, you know, you're only as good as your players. And I think we got the club of the year as well that year, Dave.
That's right. I think we did. Yes, two awards.
That to me was probably more important, because that recognised, you know, the strides that everybody in the club had made, whether that be the players, the coaching staff, the support, you know, people going around the town collecting lottery money, you know, everything that just summed it up. That
was a reward. A reward for a lot of people's effort and commitment. Yeah. So that leads us on to the 2005 Grand Final, which I don't know. I was just, you know, I don't know what you would say, but my reaction was I felt so empty afterwards. You know, hopes were so high, but it wasn't to be. Perhaps not best to dwell too much on that, but that's sport, isn't it? That's what happens. You know, it's always you against the opponent, and there's nothing that can ever be taken as read. And as I say, it turned out the way it did. But we can look back on that season as a great time in Whitehaven Rugby League Club's history.
Yeah, it was a bad day. It was a bad, bad day. I took that defeat, you know, probably worse than any other defeat, I think. You know, I'm not the best loser. You know, and I had, you know, four grand finals on the trot, two witness after that as well, which were pretty disappointing. You know, not a lot of coaches, you know, get to grand finals, but so I was very fortunate to get to that many. But I think the defeat at Castleford, you know, with the build up, we probably played our final a couple of weeks before, you know. Yeah. But it was so disappointing. I was so disappointed for the players, the staff, everything concerned. And I remember going back to the ground the day after, and we had a parade planned if we'd have won, you know, and got to Super League. And I remember saying to Des Byrne, we need to can this. You know, there was a bus there, and
yeah.
I said it was pouring down. So we
that's, you know, right.
We can't go around the town. And, you know, I was pretty embarrassed that we'd, you know, we'd let so many people down. But Des said, no, we have to do. And to be fair, we went on a little bit of a parade around the town with the league leaders and stuff. And the amount of people what turned out was unbelievable. And that'll always stick in my mind, because after having such a disappointing day and, you know, we felt we'd let everybody down, to see so many people turn out, you know, the day after and just show recognition to the team. Just shows exactly what the town was all about, and it was a pretty emotional day, that, because I must admit I didn't want to do it, but when we saw the crowds and what they did and stuff like that, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, so that really marked the end of a golden 3 years, because after that everything changed. You moved on yourself to Widnes, and you know, Things went the way at the recreation ground. But just moving on, to the rest of your career, you continued in a successful frame. There was the 2007 Northern Rail Cup final, where Widnes won with something against Whitehaven, and that just brings me on to a question. After you left Whitehaven, you played them on numerous occasions with your new club. How did that feel to you? What was that like to you, playing against Whitehaven, given what you'd done there in the past?
It's probably tougher than people think. I think from a professional point of view, all I wanted to do was beat Whitehaven. You know, when I was at Widnes, yeah. I just wanted to win. You know, but going back, you know, I always got welcomed back as well, which was good. You know, I always got welcomed back, but when we won, I always got booed off, which was always a good sign. But I remember the Northern Rail Cup final, and there was a replay on last week, and I've actually been sent the video, and we were pretty convincing that day. I think we just everything we did was, you know, just turned to goal really, and Whitehaven were, you know, probably one of their worst performances. And I remember the video panning in the stand, you know, with myself, and it was on Sky that, and yeah. I wasn't struggling, but we were winning by 30 points, 30, 40 points. And it was a pretty emotional day. I was made up we'd won, but it was also, you know, great to see so many people from, you know, from the club, and you know, they were disappointed, you know, the Whitehaven.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. It was,
similar to the grand final, you know, the previous year. But yeah, it was always tough going back. I always enjoyed going back as far as meeting people. But yeah, I think I'll always have me, you know, my connections to the club. And even now, it's you know, when I look at results, you know, I look at Wigan and I look at Whitehaven results first. I've been fortunate enough to coach at a lot of really good clubs. But Whitehaven certainly, you know, I owe them an awful lot.
So your coaching career moved on and you went to Newcastle, Barrow, finished at Swinton. And at that point, you know, maybe you could have been forgiven for saying, well, you know, that's it, I've done all I can. And it was perhaps, I don't know, fate, was it fate? Is that the right word? That perhaps the next high point in your coaching career happened here in Cumbria in 2013 with the Rugby League World Cup, when you really caught the spirit of the World Cup, I suppose, with your Scotland squad and what they did in that competition, and especially those games at Derwent Park.
Yeah, again, you know, 2013 was a tough year. You know, it was the year my dad passed away. I was to, and I always remember. Again, just had enough of coaching. You know, I'd had been fortunate with the clubs I'd had. But we had the win in 2013, as you said. You know, we were based in Cumbria. You know, we worked hard to get there. So, you know, I decided to crack on. And the time up in Cumbria again, you know, we stayed in Workington. And the performance of that team that year, you know, we played Tonga. Now, if you look at the Tongan team now,
yes,
it was very similar to that. You know, they had all the superstars playing in that and nobody gave us a chance. And I certainly think the conditions helped. You know, it was pouring down and, you know, hailstoning and, you know, the Workington people and the stadium was brilliant with us. You know, we had probably 13,000 people that day. It was absolutely jam-packed.
That's right, you know, full house. That's right. I was there myself, yeah.
Yeah, we drew against Italy, which we should have won. And then we had to beat the USA down at Salford to progress through to the quarterfinal. And we did that. We were losing at half-time. We did that. And then we played New Zealand at Headingley, which was a fantastic experience. And Cumbria is always really good to Scotland. You know, we played a couple of games in the European Championship the year after and won the European Cup. And then in 2016, we played New Zealand there again. And, you know, you know, the team made a little bit of history there. Disappointed we didn't win. You know, we drew and a lot was made of that draw, and which was phenomenal considering, you know, the two teams. But Workington was always, and Cumbria was always really good for Scotland. And I'm very lucky that I've been able to coach in those sort of games.
That's right. So, you know, I think it's safe to say was a great way to perhaps finish your sort of coaching career. I don't know. Maybe you might go back in the future, but certainly for now, coaching's been good to you, but it's in the past, and you've now moved on to a new stage of your career, Steve. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you never say never with coaching. You know, I've had a few offers to go back into the professional game coaching. You know, I had a spell at Wigan, you know, 3 or 4 years at Wigan, you know, looking after all the scholarship and, you know, being part of Sean Wayne's backroom staff, which, again, being a Wigan lad and being part of grand finals, cup finals was, you know, was brilliant, World Club challenges, you know. So, again, that was things that dreams are made of for a Wigan lad. But I've always been passionate about player welfare. I've always been really interested in it from when I was young. You know, I did that role at Wigan for a number of years as well. And I just know how important it is that, you know, the whole game has a robust and good welfare structure. And, you know, my current role now is I've just taken over welfare and development manager. So, you know, overseeing the welfare programme of Super League and the Championship, which I'm really passionate about. You know, Emma Rose Warren left the role a few months ago and left it in a pretty good spot, the welfare structure. But it's a matter of trying to improve that and, you know, just make sure our players are looked after better than anybody else.
Yeah, so a new challenge for the future, but I would have to say I couldn't think of anybody more suited to that sort of role than yourself, Steve. You've always been, very sort of people focused and very efficient in what you do. So, you know, I'm sure you'll make a success of that, as you have with everything else in the game, mate. So, yeah, all the best to you for the future.
Yeah, no, thanks, Dave. Again, it's a privileged position being able to work. You know, it's Rugby League Cares now. So, you know, Rugby League Cares is the charity of the game. You know, it's independent from Super League and the RFL. So, you know, I think that has its advantages as well. And I think the work that the player welfare managers are doing, certainly within Super League, and, you know, I've been up to Whitehaven and, you know, spoke with Des Byrne and, you know, Workington and all the other clubs as well. And, you know, we've got a lot of work to do, but, you know, fingers crossed we can get our players looked after a little bit better and, you know, look after them with regards to, you know, careers after the playing and, you know, ensuring the mental health's, you know, improving. And there's a lot of work to be done, but, you know, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's in good hands. Well, anyway, Steve, we've talked at some length. We've really reminisced and brought back some great memories, for which I thank you. Before we sign off, just any final sort of thing you want to leave with for the Haven fans, for the Whitehaven Rugby League supporters?
Yeah, I think I might have said it many times in this, you know, podcast already there, but I just can't thank them enough. You know, and I put you in that bracket as well, the board of directors, certainly Barry Richardson. You know, I was in a position that I didn't know whether I wanted to carry on in the game, but to get the opportunity to not only come and work at the club but be around the area, you know, the way the club, the people, the supporters looked after me, my family concerned, you know, it's very fond. And you ask any of my family now, even my wife, you know, it's quite a few years now since we was at Whitehaven, but unbelievable friends, and you know, they'll be there for life. And you know, I hope the club, you know, goes from strength to strength. And I think they're in good hands now with Charlo. I think Charlo's
he's done a good job over the last couple of years.
You know, and I think they're certainly on the way up again.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, it's been great talking to you, Steve. Just add my personal thanks for you taking time out to speak to us. And I'll just finish with a phrase we started using, and it's that once a mara, always a mara, Steve.
Brilliant. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. All the very best for the future. Look forward to catching up with you sometime in the not too distant future. All the very best to you and your family.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Thanks, Dave.